Welcome to Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. Several of the bills making their way through Congress these days deal with what proponents like to call digital rights management. Now that's quite a mouthful, and at first hearing, it might make a person want to nod off to sleep. But if we can stay awake for a few more minutes, we'll probably find out that this is a subject that will have profound effects on how we entertain ourselves, how we learn, and even how we live our lives. Digital rights management is a big subject, and it'll take us a few visits to the Electronic Cottage to work our way through it all. But we've got to start somewhere. So today, let's start with an overview. The basic idea behind digital rights management, or DRM as it's often called, is that whoever creates a piece of copyrightable content should have control over who uses that content and how it's used. Sounds pretty reasonable at first hearing, but let's think through all the consequences of that position for the digital domain that we all increasingly live in. If you go into a store and buy a book, for example, or a calendar or a videotape, you basically own it. You can loan it to a friend, donate it to the library when you're finished with it, or, if you own a video store, you can even rent it out to others. This is what's known in law as the first sale doctrine. Once you buy the product, it's yours to do with as you see fit, as long as you don't violate any laws. But suppose you bought a book, and when you got the book home, you noticed that inside the front cover, the book said that you don't actually own the book you hold in your hand. Instead, you only have a license to read the book once, and after you've read it, the ink will disappear. Or suppose that the videotape you just brought home from the store said you can look at this program twice and then it won't play in your VCR anymore. How would you feel about that? Well, chances are pretty good that you'll have an opportunity to find out before too long. Copyright holders of all kinds are trying to figure out ways to make their products the equivalent of pay-per-view. This is analogous to the pay-per-view movies that you can get these days on cable or satellite or in hotel rooms. You order a movie for a certain price, it plays on your television, and then it isn't available anymore. If you want to see it again, you essentially order it again and pay for it again. This scheme only works because you don't actually have a videotape of the movie in your hand. It's simply sent to your TV when you order it. Well, fair enough, you say. But suppose when you went into the store to buy a movie, probably on DVD, since that's the technology that we're moving toward, you found a rack with movies priced at $10 that you could view once, another rack priced at $15 that you could view twice, and another rack priced at $39.95 that you could view as many times as you wanted to. Same exact movie, same exact DVD as far as the eye can see, but three different prices depending upon whether you want to watch the movie once or several or many times. Or how about if you download an electronic book from the internet to read on your Palm Pilot or your personal computer or even on one of those new electronic book readers? You read the book and you think it's great, and so you send it to your brother to read, just as you might with any book that you buy today. Too bad. It won't work on your brother's computer. In fact, it'll only work on your home computer. You won't even be able to take it on a trip with you and put it on your laptop. Think these kinds of scenarios are far-fetched and futuristic? Think again. The technology already exists. Record companies, movie companies, and book publishers, which, by the way, are increasingly the same companies behind the scenes, already have these kinds of schemes in place. Several record companies have already released CDs that will only play on standard CD players, not on the CD or DVD drive on your computer. The companies are, of course, presenting this as a defense against unauthorized pirating of music, and that is a legitimate concern. But these companies are also testing the water to see how much electronic control consumers will put up with on the products they purchase. The companies are treading lightly at this point because, put simply, consumers still have a choice. Not every new CD has this kind of copy control on it yet. Some software, especially new software from Microsoft, does have digital rights management controls surreptitiously built in, but other software, such as Unix, Linux, or software from Apple Computer, does not. Some machines are able to decode control information and limit the number of times, for example, that a DVD movie will play. But other machines can't do this. From the entertainment industry's perspective, this is a little too free market for their tastes. And so they've trundled off to Congress to get, by legislation, what they've not been able to get through competition. Namely, a requirement that all new computers, televisions, DVD players, CD players, even personal digital assistants, be able to read software controls and limit the use to which you can put the DVDs, videotapes, CDs, music tracks, and perhaps even books and magazines that you buy in a store or download over the internet. This, of course, will have enormous other repercussions for other uses of some types of equipment, for example, your personal computer. In short, we're on the verge of a revolution, not in technology, but in legislation that could radically change how we all have access to information and entertainment in the very near future. And speaking of the future, we'll take a look at how hardware and software work to limit your use of digital files, whatever they may be, right here on future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.